You're listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Check us out on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter, and take your first step into a larger world. Hey guys, welcome back to Journals of the Willing. My name's Kyle.
And I'm Steve.
All right. So what are we doing this week, Steve? You know what, before we really get too deep into the comics, Force Friday's in 2 weeks. I don't really have a plan set out yet because my province does not open at midnight for craziness. So Corey and I still have to figure out what, if anything, we're going to do. But did you have any plans?
I'm definitely going to probably check it out that day. I probably won't do a midnight. We have that here, but just with work, I know I'm going to have work the next day. So I'm probably just going to, you know, risk it and just see if there's anything left in the store. So I'll definitely check it out maybe after work, head out.
Now, do you have any, is there anything you really want? Or you're just going to stride into the store and say, oh, cool, look, there's whatever action figures or vehicles or books that you really want to get.
I think I'm just going to kind of roll in and see what's there. I've been focused on finishing out the wave one of the 40th. My comic book store hasn't gotten wave two yet, so I've kind of just been mostly focused on that. So I'm not really too sure what's coming out on Force Friday. Collectibles wise, I mean, that's when Phasma comes out that day, right? Or some books, or maybe that week.
Phasma is definitely out on September 1st, which I think is Force Friday.
Okay.
And if I'm not mistaken, so, I think the Leia book is out too that day.
So I'm definitely picking those up. But as far as toys, collectibles, I'll just see what's there.
Yeah, I kind of say the same thing. And I know that once I speak to Corey and he's going to try and whip me up into a fury about it. But right now, as I talk to you about it with a more sane mind, I'm just thinking I'm going to...
That you know.
Yeah, I might hit my local Walmart on the way into work. And I remember for the last Force Friday, at 8 o'clock at opening, they had nothing on the pegs. Zero. It was all on a pallet, still wrapped in the aisle. I was like, oh, way to go, guys. Like, really? So I left in a huff, and I shot over to work. And really, I just thought about these glorious new Star Wars toys all day long. Anyway, I picked a few up later. But this time, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure I'm going to pick up a core of 3 3/4 figures. That's always where my heart is. But the 6-inch Black Series stuff has kind of really taken over for me as far as collecting action figures goes. So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But yeah, books. Like you said, there's the Leia book, which I'm going to definitely pick up. And I think a good start to really get into the books here on this show is the upcoming Phasma book. Now, this week we had a synopsis drop. And I've been curious about what this book is going to be about. And now we know. So the synopsis reads... One of the most cunning and merciless officers of the First Order, Captain Phasma commands the favor of her superiors, the respect of her peers, and the terror of her enemies. But for all her renown, Phasma remains as virtually unknown as the impassive expression on her gleaming chrome helmet. Now an adversary is bent on unearthing her mysterious origins and exposing a secret she guards as zealously and ruthlessly as she serves her masters. Deep inside the battlecruiser Absolution, a captured resistance spy endures brutal interrogation at the hands of a crimson-armored stormtrooper, Cardinal. But the information he desires has nothing to do with the resistance or its covert operations against the First Order. What the mysterious stormtrooper wants is Phasma's past, and with it whatever long-buried scandal, treachery, or private demons he can wield against the hated rival who threatens his own power and privilege in the ranks of the First Order. His prisoner has what Cardinal so desperately seeks, but she won't surrender it easily. as she wages a painstaking war of wills with her captor, bargaining for her life in exchange for every precious revelation. The spellbinding chronicle of the inscrutable Phasma unfolds. But this knowledge may prove more than just dangerous once Cardinal possesses it, and once his adversary unleashes the full measure of her fury. Was that what you were expecting, Steve?
I didn't know what I was going to expect, actually. I think it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting. I've kind of had this sort of struggle in my mind about Phasma. Just because, you know, she was so poorly handled, I think, in The Force Awakens, or at least we all were kind of sold a false bill of goods. Here comes this awesome-looking stormtrooper captain, and she's mean and badass as all get out. But all she really did was kind of turtle to Han Solo and Finn, right?
I wonder if all of this Phasma love is because of the kind of backlash that they got from fans based on that false bill of goods that you were talking about. I'm wondering if we would be even getting this if fans weren't clamoring for more, or, you know,
well,
talking about how
this is something they have to kind of come correct on, right? Like, we were promised something really huge with her and virtually got nothing. So now they have this this problem on their hands. And I spoke about this on episode 88 with Corey. But I definitely want your take, because I think you're a big Phasma fan, correct?
Right.
So you've got this spot here in The Force Awakens where she just completely rolled over for Han Solo, Chewie, and Finn, and turned off the shields. Like, that was a treasonous act in my eyes. But yet, we were told that she was this fierce, you know, battlefield captain, someone to just, you know, stay out of her way. And now that I think they're presented with this scenario where they need to make her be badass and feared before we get to The Last Jedi. Am I making any sense at all?
No, yeah. I mean, I should also preface it. I wasn't a big Phasma fan because of just The Force Awakens. I also really love Gwendolyn Christie. I watch Game of Thrones. We're big Brianna Tarth fans. So I think that also plays into it. But I don't know. I'm wondering, well, because, you know, based on the synopsis alone, you know, I'm wondering what this past is that they're talking about. And because we kind of saw her as somewhat soft in The Force Awakens, I'm wondering if, now I'm wondering if anyone else had thought this too, but I'm almost getting maybe a double agent vibe.
Oof. Wow, wouldn't that be interesting?
You know, I think that would be, I mean, I think that would be a total, like, curveball if that were the case. But it sounds like with this shady past, this long-held secret, it really feels like this novel might be trying to humanize her. Now, whether this novel reveals that she's a double agent or anything like that, I don't know. I'm afraid that they probably won't want to give away too much if that's going to be a reveal. So I have to kind of see how it plays out. But kind of this attempt to humanize her. And it would make sense given how easily she gave up in The Force Awakens. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. You see, the way I was looking at this whole thing is that in the timeline of her, of this character that we're going to know, we're going to get this novel, which takes place, I think, before The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably she's going to be all that she's cracked up to be. I can't see Delilah S. Dawson writing her as a cream puff again. Mm-mm. And then we land in The Force Awakens where she just rolls over. And then we're going to get that four-part miniseries where, again, I'm betting she's going to be a badass. So there's going to be this massive inconsistency with the character in The Force Awakens. Really an inexplicable one. You would think that someone like Phasma would have gone down with the ship. I'm not turning off this shield, so you may as well just kill me.
Part of me feels like there's an ulterior motive. You know, because she let it happen so easily, I feel like maybe she saw the long game. You know?
Yeah, I guess they could shoehorn something like that in there, couldn't they?
Yeah, hopefully it wouldn't feel forced. You know? I mean, that's the thing with trilogies. You don't really quite know until you get the rest of the story.
Yeah, that is true. This is something else I ran past Corey on episode 89, or 88, excuse me. Do you think they should have held off on introducing that character in TFA and just made The Last Jedi her launching off point and actually have given her a proper intro, making her badass right off the start?
Depends on the bigger picture, I think. But if... All right, so nixing the idea of any other ulterior motive, I think with the material that we were given, and say she is just supposed to be a badass Imperial... First Order leader, then perhaps maybe The Last Jedi should have been her starting off point. I could see that. Because so much was going on in The Force Awakens to begin with.
Yeah, and you had villains like Hux and Kylo Ren, and above them, Snoke. We had enough bad guys, and I feel like her role, mm-hmm. her responsibilities in that movie could have easily gone. Like, Kylo Ren could have given the order to kill all the villagers. And mm-hmm. he did give that role, that instruction.
However, I will say, though, we need someone outside of Kylo to represent Finn's past.
Yeah.
I think we needed someone to be more of like a physical manifestation of Finn's struggle with breaking from the First Order.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think, if anything, it definitely served as connecting, like a bridge for him.
No, that's true. Like, everybody's got their boogeyman, right? Like, so for Rey, it's Kylo Ren. For Finn, it's Phasma. For Poe, it's... I don't know if Hux is his counterpoint.
Hux, I mean, he also went toe-to-toe with Kylo Ren for a little bit, so...
Yeah, no, kind of just we'll the see. We'll see what's in store for Poe in this next movie.
Right. I mean, the movement in general. Because Poe is kind of representative of the first... of the Resistance... You know, so I feel like he's kind of our soldier, our focal point. And I don't know, his antagonist is just kind of like the First Order in general.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you there. All right, so let's take a look now at the Rogue One comic, the one shot that gave us the introduction of Cassian Andor and K2SO, the beginning of their love story together. And I think this was written by Dwayne Swierczynski with art from Fernando Blanco, neither of whom I'm familiar with at all. Do you know these guys at all?
No. I feel like this is definitely their first Star Wars title. I don't recognize the names at all from before this. I mean, I'm sure they've done other work, but as far as the Star Wars canon, I don't think they've done anything.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Although I could be completely wrong. But this book, it was a one shot. It was priced at $4.99, which is a bit steep. But and I remember when this book came out, or at least when the solicitation for it came out, I was super excited. Couldn't wait to get my hands on this. Do you remember your initial reaction to this book?
Yeah, because K2SO was probably one of, if not my favorite character from Rogue One.
Yeah, I think everybody probably feels that way.
It was such a pleasant surprise, just the humor, and that his death was the most emotional I felt, you know?
Again, I think almost everybody feels that way.
So, with that in mind, like, I was super excited for it.
And yeah, I was really looking forward to it, and it dropped, I can't remember when it dropped, but I picked it up this past weekend. And I was expecting, maybe, I don't know if my expectations got a little bit ahead of me. And I'm not going to say it's a bad book, but all right, we'll save our final thoughts for the end. But it starts with Cassian with two, I don't know if they're twin sisters, and they're certainly alien, but they communicate using like pheromones.
Like scent.
Yeah, although they can speak, they usually choose not to. which frustrates Cassian, but also affords some humor in the book. So he's off on a mission with the two of them on this godforsaken planet to capture some Imperial security protocols off a crashed Star Destroyer. And it uses a very common thing now where it starts at a certain point in the story and then flashes back to 6 hours earlier or something like to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it takes us through this very light adventure where they're kind of running around this planet, not expecting there to be as many stormtroopers as there are. And they're for some reason, they're everywhere. We don't really get into the reason why. It just, it's because reasons. You need to have a look.
Is it just me, or is that now a running trope in Star Wars? This planet shouldn't have this many stormtroopers. They get there. Oh, I was wrong.
No, this is going to be easy. Uh-oh.
Right. It's definitely used a lot, I feel.
It's been used before, I would like to think. They're sneaking around this planet, this little city within this planet, looking for access to this crash Star Destroyer and its secrets. And then Cassian is jumped by K2SO, and he's about to be apprehended. They have these brief struggle, which seems unbelievable considering K2's strength. But again, because reasons, Cassian prevails and manages to start rewriting his programming just with a few simple flicks of the button. But one thing I will say about this book is that they really did a great job of capturing Cassian and K2's voice. Like, I totally heard Diego Luna and Alan Tudyk the entire time.
I definitely think that's the shining point in the story. They were really able to capture that down to kind of K2SO's his C-3PO, his knack for pointing the odds and kind of his way of humor. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and considering this might be the last time we see these two characters, I don't know where else these two might turn up. Like, it was pretty key just to give us one more dose of these two and have it be on point. And I think that is the strong point of this book, that both characters were written perfectly based on what we saw in Rogue One. So on that front, this book is a winner. Now there's...
But on the other front...
it's not a lot happens in the book. Almost, I think absolutely nothing of consequence happens in the book other than us watching a few parallels, a few really direct and on-the-nose parallels from Rogue One carrying over into this book. And for example, K2 has to accompany Cassian and the two spies back to their ship in the same way that he's going to escort Jin and Cassian, air quotes, as prisoners back to their ship, and then they're stopped by the Empire, and we're gonna have to run diagnostics. We get a very similar scene in this, and again, the voice is right on the money. But yeah, there's like banter, like K2 being like you said, Steve, K2 being dour about their chances of success, or taking too long to K2 taking way too long to make his calculations for light speed. Like, these are things that we saw in Rogue One that were like standout moments in the dynamic of these two characters, and we got one more kick at the can of that here. And I as much as I don't like redundancy and repetitiveness in this case, I gladly accept it.
Right. I mean, especially like you said, if this is gonna be the last time we see them, and it's been almost a year now since the movie had dropped. So I think it definitely was refreshing. It was a nice reminder of the characters we loved. But yeah, I mean, I, like you said, too, it just, the story didn't really have much of consequence to it. We almost could have guessed that this is kind of how they met. It didn't really reveal too much that we couldn't have kind of put together ourselves, you know?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, I thought at one point maybe Cassian would have infiltrated an Imperial base in a very similar way to Rogue One and managed to, like, reprogram K2 on site. But what we got is pretty much the only other alternative. So, anyway, it was a fun read. The $5 price tag might be off-putting for some, and quite frankly, if somebody that I knew wanted to read this and said, I got to run out and pick up my own copy, I'd say, take mine. Like, I won't miss this. I've read it. I'm happy with it. But you can have it. I don't really care to have it with me anymore. So, in that way, it's a little bit disposable. But I thought the art was pretty good, and I thought aesthetically, it snugs right in to what we saw in a lot of Rogue One. How did you feel about the art?
I thought the art was good. It didn't seem to have any awkward moments like we kind of like to point out. Sometimes we have those kind of uncanny valley panels. Yep. that like to pop up in our Star Wars, but there really wasn't much of that. I thought K2SO, he's a very simple design. It's hard to kind of mess that up, I feel. So I thought the shading, the look of him was good. Looked a little creepier in this issue.
He was a bit more menacing with the red eyes, right?
Yeah, more menacing. I mean, there's some panels I just kind of like turned to a random page. Like when he's kind of like in the shadow and you just kind of see like his beady eyes in the dark. I don't know. It kind of reminded me like some of the original artwork for K2SO was a little on the creepier side. So I kind of appreciated that. I thought Cassian looked good. I would have liked a little difference with the twins, but I got, they're twins, so they could look alike. But like you said, you couldn't really tell them apart. But other than that, they never like mess up the stormtroopers or the ships. I think generally it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it was a consistent book front to back. I personally enjoyed the coloring most, mm-hmm. more than any other aspect. I guess in the final analysis, if you liked the dynamic between the two in Rogue One, then by all means pick this up. If $5 is something you really need to think about before buying a comic, I would sooner take that $5 and maybe buy a couple back issues from to help complement your old vintage collection of whatever series you're looking to fill up on. I don't think you'll be missing very much. And with that, we can now talk about what we're really here for. Darth Vader, number 4. I continue to be in love with this series. It is still smoking hot for me. Steve, how do you still feel about this series?
I am in love with it, to say the least. It's probably my favorite next to Aphra. Probably one of my favorite ongoings. I think it definitely... I mean, I love the first Vader arc, the first Vader series, but I feel like this definitely tops that so far. I mean, we're still early on. I totally forgot I read this before the last episode, but you hadn't read it yet. So I was like, oh man, I got to read it. But then I looked at it, I was like, nope, I definitely did read this. honestly, though, this issue, and we'll get to it, pretty early on, it has probably one of my favorite scenes in a Star Wars comic. And it's so simple, but it has probably one of my favorite scenes ever.
All right, well, let's dive into the issue. So it picks up right where issue 3 left off, which is Vader was tossed off a high mountain. He had lost a leg. He's all banged up. This is, like we said last time, a really unprecedented look at Vader getting his ass handed to him. And on the very, very first page, something I'm going to wager that we'll never see again, which is Vader, belly up on a rock, kind of bent over backwards, leg missing, and clearly in a lot of pain. I'm going to say we're not going to see this ever again. It's just such a striking visual. Like, did that jump out at you like it did to me?
Yeah. It's got a very, like, Death of Superman vibe. Like, just, it just has, like, this grand scale look of an iconic character just totally dismantled, totally just messed up. And it's definitely very striking. And it's also just a really great splash page. Just with like the mountain kind of overwhelming him in the back. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was just such an unalarming visual to see Vader in that state. Now, if you know, I think the only thing that would have made that part stronger is if we could have some audio accompaniment, just to hear him groaning in pain, and just to hear, you know, the different little servo motors in his robotic suit just wheezing and whining, trying to work. I think that would have been so powerful. And then something equally impressive happens, that droid Arix was also down in that pit, also smashed up, but still has enough functionality left in him to trash talk Vader a little more, which doesn't go over very well. Vader kind of shreds him with the Force and then uses different parts to rebuild himself, which was pretty impressive.
This was the moment I was talking about. This is probably one of my favorite moments. It's unique to Star Wars. I don't think we've seen anything like this. I think it's just so cool. It's such a cool concept. And it shows how precise and powerful he's becoming with the Force, to be able to maneuver all of those parts together to create a functioning body part. I think it's so cool. I mean, especially when he's pushed to... It seems like when he's pushed to the brink and the need to survive is when he's able to do this. But... I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we know that this isn't the end for Vader. Like, we see him in this state and he's near death. But you know it. He's somehow going to figure it out. And he's going to get the better of Kirak and Filet at some point, somehow. Whether it's, you know, is it issue 4? Is it going to be issue 5? I don't know. But obviously, Vader's back on the march. Meanwhile, Master Infilet has made it to Ambalar City, which is precariously built on like the wall of a huge dam. It's a beautiful visual, but I gotta wonder who decided that was a good idea as far as city placement goes. And it's also full of people that he apparently cares about, people who've been babysitting his Jedi starfighter, the same ships that the Jedi flew in Attack of the Clones, what Obi-Wan was flying, as well as what we saw, I think, Plo Koon flying in Revenge of the Sith. So that model, that era of Jedi Starfighter, these people have been keeping it in working order for Infilet. And he's asked them now, he's like, get this thing ready to fly ASAP. I gotta go take out this, I just killed this creature lying at the bottom of the mountain. Now I gotta go take out his boss, because these guys smoked all the Jedi. So, which I guess was his first mistake. If you're gonna go after Vader, make sure he's dead.
That's like every horror movie action trope, right? You gotta make sure the killer's dead.
Yeah, this is another second Jedi who, in a matter of, where are we here? Like a few days, a couple weeks maybe after Revenge of the Sith? It's two, mm-hmm. It's two Jedi in a row that did not finish the job. So Infilet feels something within the Force, and right away he knows, oh no, he's still alive. So he, you know, the two meet again, round two ensues, and now the monster inside Vader starts to rear its ugly head, and they're fighting at the top of that dam. And don't these idiot security guards show up to try and stop these two guys from fighting? Well, that's not going to work. Get out of here, you morons. So Vader picks up these hapless chumps and is like dangling them over the side of the dam. And Inflay, being the good Jedi that he is, doesn't want them to die. So he kind of he's sort of hanging onto them with the Force. Nothing is going his way at this point. Then Vader starts to kind of tear apart the city on the side of the wall of the dam. All these things that play on a Jedi's natural inclination to protect, now being destroyed. And so Inflay loses the guards. They're dead. The city's falling apart, being flooded by water. And Kirak is saying to Vader, "Kill me, but spare these lives." Which, no. It's a pretty flat answer. Not happening. So how did you see this scene?
Just that final scene. Epic. I would have loved to have seen this on screen, I think. I don't know. A part of me, it's like I want him to live, but I feel like we all know his fate. Inflay.
Yeah, it's game over, right?
Yeah. I mean, he has an awesome lightsaber, but like based on that design, I mean, we know this isn't the lightsaber that Vader uses.
No, it's such a nice sleek hilt.
Right. So I'm wondering, why is it that Vader doesn't bleed this crystal? Unless maybe you could like take the crystal, bleed it, put it in a different hilt. I don't know. But that seems like a lot of work.
Well, he's got time on his hands at some point soon. So, Vader acknowledges, yeah, I'm a monster. Takes Inflay's lightsaber away from him. Kills everybody. Destroys the city. Using the Force, which is pretty impressive. And he's Force choking Inflay at the same time. And seemingly snaps his neck and then drops him over the side of the dam. So, looks like it's game over for this guy. Although, I mean, nothing seems final, right? He's got the...
No, it's a very much a cliffhanger ending. Like, we get the crack, and I feel like that's enough to be able to assume he's dead. But at the same time, it's like, I think we have one or two more issues left in the arc. So, it doesn't feel like it's quite game over yet. But I don't know.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the cracking of the neck, I thought, well, that's it. But I feel like this arc isn't over until we see that crystal getting bled and Vader igniting the red blade. I don't know, maybe that's just my own headcanon at play here, but does that make any sense at all?
No, yeah, I mean, I feel like that's where this arc is going. This is going to be the lightsaber arc. I mean, unless they're going to drag it out a little longer. I don't know. Are they going to play with this kind of, like, red herring of, is this the lightsaber? No, is this the lightsaber? I don't know if they're going to toy with us for a little while.
I would think not, right? It'd be kind of annoying. Just, like, for all the goodwill that you've built up in this arc so far, we're through four issues. Issue 5 is probably coming out very soon. I would think it'd be a silly move to do another arc beyond this one where, I didn't really like that first guy's lightsaber, but I killed him anyway and took it, but I still need to find somebody else. I feel like that would get repetitive and annoying.
Right. No, that's true.
So I feel like at some point, if what you're saying is true and this arc is not done, then Inflay has got to be alive, right? He's got to somehow survive that neck cracking and that fall down into the broken dam water.
I mean, you'd have to think he was training for so long. He has to have some greater will at work.
Yeah, otherwise it seems like this guy just went down super easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it does really make you wonder, though, right? If those three security guards had not shown up, how could things have played out? Because Vader, until that point, was being outclassed by Inflay in almost every regard. It was only when Vader was able to key in on a Jedi's natural, like I said, natural inclination to want to protect.
Right.
That's only then did he gain the upper hand in the fight. Otherwise, he was getting tagged all over the place.
I just have to say, the real MVP of the art of the issue is the uniform of those security guards. it's got they've got some like Japanese 1970s starfighter vibe thing happening. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's banal.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It is a little bit of a ridiculous suit.
It reminds me of like the Japanese show that Power Rangers is based off of, like the Super Sentai. I don't know if you've ever seen like the original like Super Sentai heroes. It gave me a good chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, they're almost like they look like one of the guys from Alpha Flight,
mm-hmm.
whose name I forget right now. Shame on me as a Canadian. The Guardian is that who his name is? I think that's who it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
So yeah, there you go. It's those three hapless guards had the fate of the galaxy in their hands. If they had just shot, even if they wanted to take out both of them, just do it, and he would have saved the galaxy a lot of trouble. So yeah, like you said, we're on this cliffhanger ending. I don't know what's coming next. I don't even know when it's coming. They say here, next issue. And it's a close-up on Vader's face with his lens smashed. You see Anakin's eye behind it. So September 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got a ways to go just yet, but
a couple of weeks. I have my comic book app. I can see how many issues we have left in the arc.
Well, that would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we can actually kind of conceptualize what we have left. Let's see. I can go to my pulled issues. Week of the 5th. Right. And then we'll go a month later. Darth Vader number 6, September 27th. Darth Vader. Oh.
So Darth Vader 6.
Is this a spoiler? Should we say what's coming up?
Well, we kind of hinted at it the last time we spoke. It was Darth Vader 6 looks like it might be the introduction of the Grand Inquisitor. Is this the arc where they hunt down Jocasta Nu?
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. So yeah, we have one more issue of this arc, and then the Jocasta Nu arc.
All right, so maybe Chick, I keep calling him Chick-fil-A. he's going to come back for round 3, which I'm going to guess does not go well for him. And hopefully we see Vader with his... I'd like to see a crystal get bled. I'd like to see that at some point.
I think we'll see it.
I got to imagine so.
Does that mean they don't spoil it in the cover, right? He doesn't have a red lightsaber in the cover of... No. Because that's just the Inquisitor in the cover for issue 6.
Yeah, no, that's very clever of them to not reveal anything more.
Right? Nope, very solid.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we have, actually, then I forgot, we have Mace Windu starting soon.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get your opinion on that one, because I don't know that I'll be following that series. I'll be paying attention to the reviews and I'll see what people say. And mm-hmm. If I hear really good stuff, then I'll check it out.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be next week. Or no, in 2 weeks. Whatever. Week of August 30th.
Yeah, that's coming.
Yeah, that's soon. Sweet.
All right, short and sweet this week. Giving you a little breakdown of a couple issues. Hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think of these issues if you've read them. And hey, Steve, where can people find you on the social media?
On the social media, I am on Twitter at Joangofett, GIOANGOFett.
And we're also sharing now the Tumbling Saber Instagram account.
Yes, I am on the Instagram. Posts that I put up, I like to sign them so you know it's me, not Kyle.
I hadn't even noticed that.
Yep. I do a little dash Steve.
Oh, there you go. That makes a little bit of sense. So follow us on Instagram at Tumbling Savory. Then you'll see Steve and I both at work whenever we decide to go to work. I'm at Tumbling Saber on the aforementioned Instagram and on Twitter and also on Facebook. Come check us out. And also a thank you to all of those who have signed up to the Patreon Powerful Friends program. Thank you guys so much for such a strong response in the first week. We'll talk more about that in episode 89 of the Tumbling Saber podcast, but I just wanted to mention that right off the hop. We are super humbled. And we've gone a long way to getting to our first goal. So thanks again.
Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And with that, we'll let you guys go for the weekend. Again, we hope you enjoy this episode. Let us know what you think via Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And we'll catch you guys all again in episode 89 of the podcast. And we'll see you guys later. You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Learn more about the network and its members at StarWarsCommonwealth.com.